This is the Bad Apples, episode 15 of season 5. Hi everyone, my name is Klaatu, and this is the Bad Apples Linux Ogcast. Today we're going to talk about multimedia, really. Lots of multimedia kinds of subjects. Nothing hard and fast like tutorial-wise and stuff, but a good little overview of some of the multimedia stuff I've been doing lately, and therefore probably a flavor or a little sneak peek of what's to come in later episodes, since I've been really working a lot on different projects and actually been taking extensive notes on the process, the workflow of how one makes all this stuff kind of happen. So that's what we'll talk about, so let's get started. It's a fairly warm summer evening, so I'm outside recording this. Of course, I live in a city, so it's not like I go outside and suddenly experience beautiful, peaceful silence. It's more like lots and lots of traffic. So if you hear traffic in the background, that would be why. But anyway, I've mentioned this on a couple of shows now, on a couple of venues, and I'm hoping that I've mentioned it enough places that it's that word is getting around, but I figure it can't hurt to mention it again on my own show. So the Great Multimedia Linux Sprint, the results of that are released, and it's pretty easy to find it. You can go to skyhaven.net, that is Sky, Old English spelling, S-K-Y-E, haven.net. You can also go to slackermedia.info/downloads or something like that, and there's a link to it there. There are torrents, there's direct downloads, and there's even on the skyhaven.net the ability to cherry pick through the actual files and grab just what you want. Point being that this is a super power bonus pack of just all kinds of multimedia materials that you can use to start getting creative with. And this is cool, and this is important, at least to me. You know, as an artist, I think that this is a neat little cause. So it's essentially just a whole bunch of royalty-free, various licenses are involved, so I can't say Creative Commons because it's not strictly true. There's open font license, there's artistic license, there's Creative Commons, there's public domain, certain ones that just aren't even named, and they just kind of like the artist is saying you can use it. So lots of different licenses involved, and that's another issue in itself. But the materials themselves are really great. Textures, brushes, fonts, sound sample packs, all kinds of things. Check it out. It's free. You are welcome to grab it. Tell your friends about it. Anyone on any, really, distribution, but honestly, any OS could use this. So definitely check it out. It is, of course, the result of about a 16-hour multimedia sprint performed by a whole bunch of people online, sort of organized more or less by me, although not as well organized as probably it could have been, but it was the first one, so I pardon myself for that. But it was good stuff. It required a lot of dealing with licenses later on, and that is a pain. And so I think what I've learned from this is, I guess, well, I already knew this, but I mean, why copyrights are so evil, intellectual property and all this other ridiculous stuff. Basically, in order for me to be able to issue you, the listener or the audience, a blank check and say, no, really, you can do whatever you want to with these materials, I would essentially have to contact every artist whose stuff we have on this bonus super power pack and literally buy the rights from them. That would be the only, I guess, surefire way I could assure everyone that they can do whatever they want to with this stuff. And that's how the big companies do it. That's how Loopzilla or macOS or Adobe or, you know, anyone offering the raw materials for reuse and maybe modification and redistribution and maybe commercial redistribution, that's what they do. They purchase the rights. You don't go into a movie studio or a TV studio or a multi-million-dollar marketing company and find them searching, you know, Flickr for Creative Commons pictures or Google Images, you know, to see if there's anything they can rip off. It just doesn't happen. They spend the money. They get someone to do exactly what they want, even if it means ripping off another piece that already exists. At least they've got their own version of it. They've got the negatives, as it were. And so they can claim ownership of that raw material that they can then use in, really anything. And, I mean, this even goes back, if I may get a little bit film me on you. I mean, old movies like Universal Studios or Columbia, I think. These old movies from the 50s, they actually had stock music that they had composers and orchestras in-house that would write just all kinds of music. That's all they would do all day. They'd write and play music, and they would record it. And then this music would go into a big library, and the big library would be the stash of music that the studios would draw from for all the rest of their movies. And you didn't see movie executives or music people from the studio going out to search for the latest hits. It wasn't done. There wasn't that kind of licensing and partnership stuff back then. They simply owned everything. Now it's a lot different, but the same principle applies. Like if you want to be able to download a whole bunch of free stuff and be able to take it to court and say, there, I own this stuff, well then you need to buy the rights. And obviously that's not what we did for this sprint. We did respect licenses, we did respect the artist's wishes, and I have looked at every single file in this sprint, and if there's a license saying, don't redistribute this, or you can redistribute this, but don't sell it, you know, whatever, then I would either, well, if it said don't redistribute, then I wouldn't redistribute it, but if it said that there's terms and conditions for the use, then I would put it in a separate folder, and I would mark it as such. So, for the most part, everything in this pack is stuff that you can simply use for yourself, you can use in commercial ventures, you can just basically do whatever you want to do with it. Whatever license it may have been placed under, those are the terms defined by the artist. So there they are. Go get them. Go use them. If you like it, then consider helping me out on the next multimedia sprint, as yet to be announced. The things that I don't think we really did get quite enough of was music loops, like the kind of music loops that would enable you to open up Ardour or Audacity and just start throwing some loops together and come out with a song that makes you feel and sound like a pop star. We got a lot of other good stuff, though, and we'll get more later. We'll get even more stuff later on. Lately, I've been on a real texture sprint myself. I've just been going out and taking as many photos of textures as I could possibly find, and I've gotten quite a few of them, and a lot of them are just digital pictures, so they're not super, super high quality in terms of being a photo snob and wanting, like, the very best, but I have found all these things infinitely useful, and so this power pack is really good, and I think the second one will be possibly even bigger and better, which is not usually a hype, like a method of hype that I really care about. I never did really see why things always had to get bigger and better. But in this case, I think the bigger will be because we'll have more sound, and that's just by, you know, it just is. It's just larger. But the better will be because we will have more stuff. So more is always better. So there you go. So go get it. It's skyhaven.net or slackermedia.info/downloads. Anyone using any distribution should find this infinitely useful. If you absolutely want to do multimedia and need a starting place or some raw materials, this is going to be it. And frankly, even any OS. I mean, honestly, if you have friends using Windows or Mac, turn them onto this because it might be a good intro to them to this whole free culture and free software kind of idea. It could be an impetus for them to get more curious about it. And if they see that, wow, you mean I can use these fonts any way I want to and it's completely legal, then maybe they'll get into it. Maybe they won't care either, but maybe they will. It just depends. So everyone should be able to use this, and that's the idea, really, to promote free culture, the idea of collaboration rather than what's mine is mine and I've copywritten it and you can't have it and can't use it unless you okay it through me first and all this other weird stuff that seems to be so pervasive in the sort of mainstream legal art world. So knock yourself out. I've already given reports on other shows, on the Southeast Linux Fest and on FOSCON, so I'm not going to go into the festivals as such, except to say again that they were really, really fun, and that if you haven't been, you should go, or that if you've been, you should go again later. And of course, the next big one is Ohio Linux Fest, and that really is a lot of fun, so you should definitely check that out. I have it on pretty good authority that Sigflup, who you'll know, who I knew originally because she sent me a Sega Genesis sprite editor or something back in episode, I don't know, probably last season sometime. And that's how I first encountered this Sigflup character. But of course you'll know her later on, or maybe concurrently, as a host of Hacker Public Radio. She does some amazing things, and I don't know that I've ever mentioned it on this show. I might have, but there is a little application that she wrote called Yes Please, and I'll go into that in a moment. But I have it on good authority that she's going to be at Ohio Linux Fest this year. So if you want to meet a really cool hacker who does just, I don't know, some unbelievably cool things, then definitely try to get over to Ohio Linux Fest. I would love to say definitively that there was going to be like a Hacker Public Radio panel or something like that. I would really think that would be really cool, but I don't know that that's going to happen because Ohio Linux Fest obviously is still being planned. But with that many Hacker Public Radio hosts, I think that'd be pretty neat because, I mean, I know I'll be there, Monster B will be there, Sigflup will be there, 330 will be there, you know, lots of people who've done stuff for Hacker Public Radio will be there. It would be pretty neat to sort of do an HPR event. So anyway, back to Southeast Linux Fest for a moment, and then I'll get on to Yes Please eventually. But back to Southeast Linux Fest, I just wanted to mention, number one, that I had a booth there, Slacker Media booth, and I was handing out Slacker Media and Hacker Public Radio stickers. They went over really well. It was a lot of fun. I also distributed that Power Pack multimedia sprint thing to a lot of people, actually, because I had it on thumb drive, so if they brought me a thumb drive, I just copied it right over to theirs, and so that proliferated that a little bit. But also, I got a lot of interviews, so if you haven't been listening to Hacker Public Radio lately, and I know that the rate of the shows being posted has slowed down since earlier this year, but I've got a whole bunch of Southeast Linux Fest interviews that I got with just really, really interesting people, like just really incredible interviews, and they're being posted slowly but surely onto Hacker Public Radio, so check that out. Anything else about Southeast Linux Fest? I don't think so. It was a lot of fun, really cool, so on and so forth. Met lots of cool people. That was a lot of fun. Just some random people, too. I mean, I just met, I can never remember names, unfortunately, so I'm going to sound like either a snob or totally oblivious, and I assure you it's more the latter than the former, but or at least I like to think so. But I just met lots of cool people, you know, went out to lunch with just random people. It was just a lot of fun, and I would like to think that it's that fun, you know, for everyone, and I think as long as you put yourself out there a little bit and just venture to talk to people, even if you don't know them, then chances are you're going to make some new friends or at least have some cool encounters. So if you're like me and have a little bit of a hard time at events like that where there are actually other physical people there, I assure you that at these festivals, there's really no reason to be afraid. And that is probably why I like the geek community so much, because so many of them are actually quite friendly and open to being friendly, unlike, you know, a lot of other communities that I was kind of used to. Probably wrong impression of these other communities, but I always felt like they were very, you know, threatening, and you couldn't really go talk to people, and, you know, everyone's going to be too cool to talk to you. In the geek community, it seems like everyone's pretty much just kind of down, and they're pretty much accepting and stuff like that. So at least that's been my experience, and I don't want to just say that everyone's like that or anything, but, you know, a lot of these events seem to have that as kind of an overriding theme, as far as I can tell. Southeast Linux Fest, and yeah, the booth went well. So, as for Sigflup, she did this application, and I don't think I've talked about it yet on this show, and it's called Yes Please, YESPLZ, and what it is a little command line application, and it uploads whatever's on your screen at that moment to unixporn.com, and of course, unixporn.com is the site that I started, and it just basically is a whole bunch of Linux desktops. You know, people just take a screenshot of their desktop as it appears on their Linux box or Unix box in general, and they upload it to the site. And that way, if you're ever stuck in front of a Windows box and start getting lonely, or you need a little bit of Linux goodness, or at least X11 goodness, or Zorg goodness, then you can go to unixporn.com and look at someone's desktop, and you can see, you know, the old familiar beauty that is KDE or Fluxbox or XFCE or OpenBox or Awesome or whatever. So that's what Unix porn is, and at some point Sigflip apparently got it into her head that she was going to write an application that would take a screenshot from the command line of your desktop and upload it to the account that you specify in the command line. It's really well done. I have compiled it personally on Intel 32-bit, 64-bit PowerPC and Spark, and it's compiled on all of them. I cannot vouch for sure that it actually functions on Spark per se, because I didn't have access to Zorg on the Spark box, but it did compile, so I figure if it compiled, it probably is going to work. But anyway, the point is, it's a really cool little application, and it's a lot of fun to use, and you can get it from uberleet hackerforce.deepgeek.us. That's Sigflip's home right now on the web, I guess, or at least it's the Uberleet Hacker Force's home on the web. And it's really cool, so check that out. And it was completely unsolicited, and it was really, really kind of neat that Sigflip did that. And it's a really neat application, because you can define in the command, you know, just yes, please, and then you can say, okay, --, title is going to be, and then you can title the title of the picture, the description, --dec, give it a description, --username, put your, or maybe it's just --user, actually. You put your unixporn.com username, and then it prompts you for the password after it's taken the screenshot, and it doesn't show your password, you know, so it's not like you're going to upload it to Unix Porn and accidentally have your password right there in your command line that you're typing the yes please command on. So no worries there. And there's even a really nice option of doing a sort of a yes please configuration file, so that you can define all those things like your username and maybe a standard title and stuff like that in the configuration file, so you don't necessarily have to actually issue or type in all that all the time. And I guess theoretically you could even bind it to some kind of keyboard shortcut. So it's a great little application. I'm infinitely impressed by it. And I was involved. I'm glad to have been involved in the QA of it. You know, I mean, she kept sending it to me and Cobra 2 and asking us to try it out. And so I got to see it in all of its different iterations, which was kind of interesting, because I'd never really seen an application in that kind of development. I mean, I've seen applications develop over time, but actually seeing things that did work and didn't work as it kind of developed very quickly at that point, whenever she thought it was ready for, you know, QA, it was pretty neat. So that's Yes Please, and again, that's Uberleet, hackerforce.deepgeek.us. Well, it seems I can't get away from covering MAMO like every other episode now, so I guess I'll just talk about it again. I didn't really intend to, but I was in IRC the other day, and Vulcan Writer dropped in and kind of mentioned this theme for MAMO. And it turns out it's a MAMO 5 theme for Diablo, meaning that on your N800 or N810, or feasibly N770, I guess, because I think they did port Diablo back to that eventually, the community did. But on that device, you can have a theme on MAMO, on Diablo, that will look like the latest and greatest MAMO, which I guess is MAMO 5, I think, which of course is the thing on N900. So I decided to try it out, and wouldn't you know, it's a really, really nice theme. I mean, gorgeous theme. It's dark, it's black, you know, it's that kind of KDE 4, well, not anymore, because KDE 4 is now on Air, and it's kind of bright and cheery. But it's kind of that, I don't know, I guess Windows 7 or something, or maybe the Ubuntu, that new dark theme on Ubuntu. You know, it's that kind of feel, that sort of glossy black or shiny black look, and it's really smart looking. It's really quite nice. But even neater is the fact that it kind of lays out the main screen differently. It has that little system tray up at the top, but nothing down the side, which is kind of cool. So you might be thinking, well, how do you switch apps? And I guess you can switch apps by hitting the little home button. I think that still brings up a little menu or something, although I forgot to try it. But I've tried other themes that remove that sidebar, and that's what you would do. But Vulcanrider then told me about something called Telescope. And Telescope is it's an application switcher that essentially takes you into a new screen where all the application windows are kind of laid out, and you can see them from a sort of a bird's eye view of what exactly you've got running at that moment. So right now, if I've got the Notepad and MAMA recorder running on my Nokia, which in fact I do, I could hit my little home button, my little house button on the side of my Nokia, and the two applications would, you know, I would zoom out from both of them, and I would see two little windows on my desktop, or whatever you'd call it, palm top, whatever, and I could click on either one of them, and they would be brought to the front. So it's a really nice little switcher. It looks slick. It feels slick. It's not a super fancy, like, animation thing. You know, you don't actually see the zoom out or anything like that. I don't care. It works. It works quite well. It also makes it feel like it's a new device. I mean, it's one of those themes that just really kind of, like, changes the whole thing for you. It's a very complete theme. It's got lots of different things going on. You know, they didn't leave anything behind, forget to theme this, forget to theme that. It seems like it's really well done. I guess the guy who did the theme is called Kroll, or Kroll, K-R-O-L-L, I think. And I'll have links to them in the show notes in case you want to try it out for yourself. But it's a really nice theme, is the point. And Telescope is just really cool. I would highly recommend that, whether or not you try the theme. As for the rest of MAMO, it's still MAMO. It's still Diablo, right? I mean, I still have this issue with the scroll bars not being thick enough in certain applications and just random things like that. But certain things are larger, like the close button on Windows. They expanded that. It's big. It's a big blue X up in the right-hand corner. And I love it. Usually, I'm not a big fan of, like, big things. You know, I don't want big buttons and big dialog boxes and stuff like that. I believe in efficiency and space and stuff. But if you've got a device, and maybe the Nokia N800 was too early to become, you know, to know that it was going to be a finger-driven device, but at this point we're all aware that we all want to use our finger on these devices. We don't want the stylus, right? The stylus is out, the finger is in. So at some point I would have thought someone somewhere would have, and I know whenever I'm saying this I think, well, gee, Klaatu, you should really learn all of this stuff yourself, and then you could be that someone. And so I hesitate to complain about this stuff, except for the fact that Nokia is charging money for this stuff. Therefore, I do feel like I can complain about it, even though I didn't actually pay for it. I traded an iPhone for it, but I digress. The point is that someone at Nokia should take it upon themselves, there you go, to take a look at the scroll bar in the web browser, for instance, and say to themselves, gee, that's too small. I should really fix that. I should make that finger drivable, or at least turn on an option somewhere that I can, you know, if I, the user, want it to be larger, then I can have that. And again, Fennec did that by Mozilla. It actually did a really nice job of fixing that, but the point is that this should be something, the burden there should be on Nokia, on the people behind MAMO. And of course, I know all bets on MAMO are off anyway because it's dead, etc., etc. The real point of this segment was cool new theme, check it out, and Telescope is really, really nifty. So check that out as well. Well, I'd say it was time for a cup of coffee, and then let's get back here and talk about multimedia. See you in a bit. Okay, a little bit about multimedia on Linux. This, of course, is a topic that is very near and dear to my heart because I've really been trying to maximize the amount of multimedia work that I can comfortably do and efficiently do on GNU Linux lately, especially because I've actually been intimately involved with a lot of different projects that actually need multimedia stuff to get done before a certain deadline. So I've kind of been giving GNU Linux a run for its money in a way, and it's been good. I've been taking a lot of notes. I've been kind of processing the information that I'm getting from all these experiences, what works, what doesn't work, what needs improvement, all that other good stuff. So I feel like I'm getting a lot of data, and I thought I might just kind of introduce some of those points here in the last portion of this episode, and eventually I'll cover certain specific things in more detail, but I wanted to touch on sort of an overall view of it now. Let's just start maybe with Scribus, because this is an incredible application, and there's not a whole lot to say about it except that it's great. Scribus is one of those applications that if you're looking for a near drop-in replacement for proprietary equivalents, Scribus would be something to look at. Now, granted, unless you are really into sort of the print and advertising and publication world, you probably don't really know a whole lot of people coming around asking for drop-in replacements for Quark Express and Adobe InDesign, and that's okay, and I realize that, but for those who maybe are or simply want to be able to talk about something that is truly worth every bit of what it claims to be, Scribus would definitely be an application to look at. It's just been redone in Qt 4, so it looks fantastic, it behaves fantastically, and it's fully featured. It really is. It truly is a fully featured page layout program. Now, you might think, you know, so is OpenOffice, and you'd be wrong. You'd be absolutely wrong. OpenOffice is not a page layout program. It can introduce page layout notions and ideas into it, but that does not a page layout program make. Scribus is a page layout application. It has the ability to create containers on a page and then to drop things into that container. So it might be an image of 100 dpi sitting right next door to an image that is 300 dpi. And it can do things like that. It can do word. It can do text wraps. It can have multiple text boxes and flow the text into these boxes magically. It can just output to whatever you want to. It can output to PDFs. It can be output to CMYK, to RGB. You know, it does all these kinds of things, and it does it very well. And there's not a whole lot that I was missing from Scribus when I was using it, and this is coming from a modest user of Quark Express and InDesign in the past. I wouldn't ever consider myself a power user of either of those applications. That would be untrue. I was never a power user of a page layout program, but I knew power users. I saw how they used them, and I used them quite well myself. So I've got some experience with that, and now I've got quite a bit of experience with Scribus. And last year I used it as well for the Southeast Linux Fest program guide. But this year I used it, and I was on a time crunch, and you know, Scribus didn't let me down at all. And that's one of those times where things let you down. You know, when you've got a couple of hours to finish some job up because it has to go to the printer right now. You know, that's when things start to fail. And Scribus did not. It was fantastic. It was robust, fully featured. It did everything I needed it to do. The text editing capabilities weren't great, but then again, they are very rarely great in a page layout program. So I wasn't surprised by the fact that it wasn't the best word processor in the world. That would be room for improvement, but I have yet to see a page layout program that has a text editor that you would really feel great about. It's when you're doing that sort of thing in a page layout program, it's because you are fixing a last-minute mistake or something like that. It's not for serious word processing. Let's see. Other than that, I can't really think of anything. I mean, literally, it's just it's a really nice program. Get the latest version, the unstable one, because that's really it was totally stable and it had all the features, you know, all the latest features. Good page layout. It exists. It is Scribus. Really neat that it's on Qt 4. I mean, obviously that opens it up to all kinds of cross-platform potential. So yeah, it's really, really solid. Really, really nice. So do check that out if you're into that sort of thing, or if you want to get into that sort of thing, or if you have friends who want to do page layout and are looking for some alternative to the professional ones being Quark Express and Adobe InDesign, and also the sort of hobbyist ones like, I don't know, iWork or FrontPage, if that even exists anymore. So that's a really, really promising, kind of like strong, solid thing. Another solid thing, of course, that I'd always cite is Inkscape. Really, really solid. Really nice. The things that aren't so solid might be something like GIMP, which, you know, still doesn't have CMYK support, has issues with this multi-window thing, and I know 2.7 is, like, just coming out and stuff like that, so things will get better and stuff like that, but GIMP needs work, lots of work. So that would be, like, one little point where is maybe a sensitive area. At the same time, the other day I was at a school that is Mac-based, and someone needed to print some stuff on this big Epson, it was like this big, I don't know, large format printer, and the computer that they had hooked up to this was, of course, a Mac. And so I was showing them how to align the image where they wanted it on the page, because they needed to print it, you know, they had to calculate the margins and things like that, which I've always hated, but I have to admit Epson actually, this particular, and again, this is a very high-end printer, so that's probably why it actually is working, but they did it really well, because it actually almost worked. But the point is that they were printing out of Photoshop, and I sat down to show them a couple of tricks, and I realized that I had no idea where anything was, and I'm talking about simple stuff, color level and rotate the image. That's the two things I wanted to do for them, because the printout that they needed, really, they needed to rotate the image. Couldn't tell you where that thing was. It took me forever to find how to turn the canvas. The color levels, I had no idea where that was. I just couldn't tell you. I could not find it. I was looking all over the place. It was embarrassing. And I realized, you know, and I've sort of had these moments fairly frequently recently, but I'm realizing that I've kind of been right, that intuitiveness and interface design and all this other good stuff is largely just what the user is used to. Because, I mean, it had been at the very least a year since I'd even sat in front of Photoshop. And keep in mind, I used to be Photoshop certified, so I knew Photoshop at one point very well. And yet, sitting down in front of it just earlier today, it was like a foreign animal to me. I could not find anything. I was looking in all the places that GIMP would have stored things, and I just couldn't find it. The one thing that Photoshop still has over GIMP, though, and this, I don't care what your experience level is that GIMP, when you hit a keyboard shortcut, if the active window is the palette window, then the keyboard shortcut gets absorbed by that window and not by the actual canvas. That's a huge weakness, and one that I assume will be solved by the one window feature. The other huge weakness is the text tool, which hopefully in 2.7 has gotten better. So those are sensitive areas. GIMP, sensitive. But still great. Still love it. Still choose it over anything else. And Inkscape is always great. Yes, I already said that. Blender is still great. I'm still on 2.49b. I have not gone over to 2.5 yet, primarily because I know 2.49b's layout. Getting used to a new layout might be a little bit difficult right now. And also, you know, the stability of 2.49b versus 2.5, what, alpha? Yeah, I don't think so. And add to that, I have heard that all the video sequence editing features are not necessarily present in 2.5 yet. So that would really kill it for me, since that's really what I use Blender for. So you've got Blender chugging away. Big issue here is the workflow. And workflow is a word that a lot of people don't understand why it's a word and why it matters. But for instance, with Blender, you've got a lot of different steps that you have to take to get your footage in the condition that you want it to be in so that you can edit it. And it's not necessarily like other applications. And again, this, like Photoshop versus GIMP, is going to be simply what you're used to in some cases, but there are some other cases where it really just doesn't make sense that the workflow is a certain way, at least not from a video editor standpoint. It might make perfect sense for the animation person's standpoint, because animators typically animate only the frames that they need, whereas video editors classically get a lot more than they ever need and want to edit it down from there. So there are some things like color correction and stuff like that where to do it the best way, you would do it the opposite that you really should, which is you'd color correct your footage first and bring that scene into the video editor and then edit it that way. But color correcting all that footage first, I mean, that's ridiculous. Why color correct? I mean, you should color correct after you've whittled it all down, right? So there's that backwards workflow step that really doesn't, it almost can't be fixed in the current way, as far as I can tell, that Blender deals with things. So what really probably needs to happen is that, like I keep saying, someone needs to either make Blender into a video editor, and no, I haven't made no progress on that idea whatsoever, and to be honest, I haven't really been studying any kind of coding lately at all, so oh well. But the other thing would be this whole Lightworks, you know, this great Lightworks hope thing that we've all got going, where Lightworks is open source now, and they're going to port it over to Linux, and it'll save all of our lives, because it's going to be a great professional-grade free editor for Linux. Again, check is in the mail, doesn't do a whole lot of comfort for me. I know too much about that sort of thing to really put any kind of stock in it. However, it's hope, and so I hope for the best. But yeah, Blender, I would say, again, is a sort of a, or rather, video editing would still be a very sensitive topic. Having said that, I'm having a great experience in Blender, such as it is. It is just an incredible application. It is making video editing a pleasure, to be honest. It really is. It's actually making the video editing fun, which, I mean, that's a huge part of video editing. You don't want to hate life while you're video editing. You want to be having fun. That's why people do multimedia, to have fun, so that they don't feel like they're working. So Blender, it really, really is nice. I mean, I really love the application, and I really kind of wish, even almost more than I wish Lightworks would occur for Linux. I almost just wish Blender could become, you know, the perfect application for video editors, because I really see that as kind of what it could be, but I don't have the code to back it up, so there you have it. Another application that is sort of a, what would it be called, a linchpin in Linux multimedia would be Audacity. And Audacity is really coming a long way, and my most recent favorite version was, I think, 1.3.11. That over 1.3.8, whatever the most recent versions are, they've just kept getting better and better. And it's just little random things, like when you try to delete a little piece of audio, when you amplify it down to -60 decibels, for instance, does it zoom you out and make you kind of lose your place? I mean, that weird, stupid things like that that would appear in the dot, I think it was 8 release, and they got fixed in .11, and now dot, I think, 12 is out, and it's fantastic. Chess Griffin's got a build for that on Slack, builds.org, and it is fantastic. I've been editing and editing and editing, doing all kinds of crazy things that used to make the whole computer, well, not the whole computer, Audacity just crash. It's been fantastic. Speaking of crashes, if you have an Audacity crash, you need to save your project and copy all of your audio into that project when it asks. That's just something that I've been meaning to mention somewhere forever, and now that Audacity doesn't crash anymore, I guess I should mention it. So that's when Audacity pops up and says, do you want to copy the audio into your project? Say yes, because then the recovery actually works. So yeah, Audacity is coming a long way. It's really an exciting sort of development to see. And, you know, I've been with Audacity for a very long time, way before I was with Linux. So seeing it progress the way that it has progressed is just, it really is actually exciting. And I almost think, I really find myself wondering, like, what's next? Like, what have they got up their sleeves? Because it could be something unexpected for all I know. It's a really exciting development to see it just reach this kind of stability and robustness. And I like to use the word robust when I think of an application that you feel confident in. You know that if you hit that key and this key, it's not going to cause any crazy unexpected result. It's going to happen. It's going to do what you want. And if it can't do what you want that moment, it's going to nicely tell you that it can't. It's not going to just crash or hang. So that's a robust application. It can import, it can export all kinds of formats. It's just a really, really nice application. It's really gotten a lot better. Keep in mind, I'm not using Pulse, so my raving is about Audacity and Alsa and Slackware. Great combination. So all in all, what I'm trying to say, I guess, is that I'm actually seeing marked improvement in multimedia on GNU Linux, which is a big deal to me, because, I don't know, for about a year, maybe, I've been doing multimedia on Linux, and it's kind of been, I didn't really see huge improvements. I saw sort of, you know, it could do it, and it was okay, and that's that. But at this point, at this moment, this last month, at this right now, I'm really starting to see things that I can point to and say, see that didn't used to happen, and now it is happening, and it's a good thing. So I don't know if developers are just paying more attention to multimedia, like, I don't know if that's what it is, or, you know, I mean, I'm sure that kernel hackers aren't suddenly saying, oh, let's turn our attention to multimedia, but I mean, I don't know, maybe if we're attracting more multimedia developers or something, or if it's just that coincidentally a lot of things have kind of reached a head where big improvements have started to be made. I don't know the cause, but I do know that the result is me sitting in front of Slackware 13.1, KDE 4.4, and, you know, all these different applications that I've listed, like Scrivis and Blender and Audacity, and even GIMP, you know. I mean, I'm hearing about improvements, but Inkscape for sure. Like, they have this cool path stroke plugin that they've got. They've made huge improvements. They've made lots of progress, and it's very exciting because it's like a multimedia geek witnessing really the development of a really powerful multimedia platform that's free, and that's a big deal. So there you have it. That's my, I guess, report. And I'll have more specifics, like I say, later on, because I have done some very specific tasks that I would like to kind of analyze and give sort of the workflow for Linux, because proprietary applications, they have workflow built in. You know, they say open this application and do everything that we allow you to do in a specific order, and then you'll end up with your artwork done. On Linux, you don't have that. You don't have these monolithic applications. Even the big applications like Inkscape and Scrivis and things like that, they're not monolithic. There are still components that you can utilize to help you import things or to help you convert things or whatever. So it's actually a good thing. It really is. But it does take you a moment to say, oh, okay, so I don't just launch Magic App 1. I have to first do this to the thing, and then I should take it into Magical App number 1, and then I can do this with it, and then I can convert it, and then I can send it off. It's more flexibility, and it's a good thing, and I would not trade it for the blind kind of auto magic kind of stuff that the proprietary software likes to promote and to try to get you into, because of course they want you to do that, because then they are your only answer. They are the only thing that you know, because you open it and you're in their little bubble, and that is that. Linux doesn't do that for you. I hope it never does that for you. It's just understanding how to manage the project with different components rather than simply entering a magical bubble where you can do the whole project, as long as you're playing by the proprietary bubble's rules. Well, I think that's about it for this episode, so thanks for listening, as always. My name is Klaatu, and you can find me on Jabber at notklaatu@jabber.org. You can find me on IRC on Freenode, irc.freenode.net, and you can find me typically in hash /ogcastplanet, and I am notklaatu in there. You can email me at klaatu@hackrepublicradio.org. That's probably about it, actually. You can also find me out on the streets, chilling. So I will see you later.
Really powerful.